All right, Galveston, welcome. This is David Landry out from the 1839, and we're here with Bob Brown for our Civic Spotlight today. Bob is councilperson for District 3. Welcome. Thanks for coming today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David.
Oh, yeah, happy to do it. Let's start out, for those of you who don't know, I think a lot of people know you, but let's start out for the people who don't. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and the things that you do for the city?
Yeah. I grew up here in Galveston. I'm not a BOI. I got here when I was about 3 years old. My parents moved here to open up a Chevrolet dealership. Mm. And so I went through all the high schools, you know, and then I left town like a lot of people did in Galveston back in those days. Went out to Florida, worked a little bit out there, then went to the Hill Country, got a couple of degrees in a couple of different things, and then came back here to the island probably in the 1990s. I'm trained and I have practice as an architect and a planner. That's what I did. Went off to Hill Country, went to UT Graduate School for Architecture.
Fantastic.
Then came back here and started getting involved with the city. So it was everything about the city, the government, the school district, Ike Recovery, and volunteered for the Planning Commission. I was on the Strand Mechanic Historic District Review Board before there was a Landmark Commission. And so then when there was a Landmark Commission, I was chair of that, first Landmark Commission. On the GISD Facilities Committee before a bond issue, that was a couple of issues ago. Mm-hmm. And on long-term recovery from after Hurricane Ike. And I started working at UTMB in their portfolio management department, which is responsible for all the facilities and architectural engineering project. And my first day there was supposed to be the day after Hurricane Ike hit. So when I got there, the university was pretty torn up. You know, a million square feet of space that was supposed to be under our department was flooded and now out of service.
Wow.
So it was a mess. But I worked there, and after 11 years or so, which is about the length of time it took to completely recover from Hurricane Ike, sadly to say, I retired. And I got to thinking that I really enjoyed my public service before I retired, and so I thought maybe this would be an opportunity to get back into it. And so, you know, just thinking about other things, it seemed like I'd done all the other stuff you could do, and city council was maybe the next thing. I grew up here, my parents lived here, and so I got a lot of history and a lot of background, and I'm not a youngster, so that makes the background even longer.
Right. Well, I think, you know, being born, like coming here at three, that still qualifies as BOI for most people. If you went to school, you know, if you went to Galveston, to school, made it through school in Galveston, then you're BOI. And you definitely qualify with all you've done. So I've learned something about BOI, the people who are actually born here. But you can actually be bestowed that title as well by people, right, if you do enough for the island. And so I would say even if you didn't technically qualify, you're definitely BOI, I think, for sure. So I don't know if I'm qualified to give that or not, but I'll give it to you.
Well, there's also back on the island. That's another BOI.
Yeah, that's another BOI. That's right. Okay, so let's jump in here, and I'll ask you a few questions. So let's start with your district, the neighborhood, let's say. What does District 3 mean to you personally?
Well, probably every council person thinks their district is the best, and I'm no different, but I think it's also probably the most diverse. Mm-hmm. I'll just briefly explain where my district is. If you start, it's a ship channel, a Galveston ship channel, the working waterfront at the end of 25th Street, and you go south, all the way to Broadway, mm-hmm. you turn left until you hit the seawall, mm-hmm. everything to the east and then to the north, including Pelican Island, that's all District 3. That includes a lot of different things. It includes the East End Historic District neighborhood, Fish Village, and the working waterfront, mm-hmm. plus two cruise ship terminals. It includes Stewart Beach Park, right. and Atfell East Beach Park. Uh-huh. There's going to be a new park down there, East End Lagoon Park. It mm-hmm. includes all the condos down there.
Right.
There's two National Register landmark districts. One is the East End Historic District, and the other is the Strand Mechanic Historic District. That's also in my
right,
district.
Right.
So there's an awful lot of diversity, which I also look at as opportunity. There are things that really bring a lot to Galveston, help characterize Galveston, and it's the old part. It was the part that was settled first,
right?
The East End part right here. And so there's a lot of resources and a lot of good things to protect, I think, in the East End. And I live in the East End Historic District. Mm. You know, it's a really walkable area. I can walk to the beach from where I am, walk to downtown, walk to a dozen of good restaurants, and, you know, walking and bicycling. I think it's a part of town that's suitable for that.
Right, absolutely. It's unique unto itself. I think that's fair to say, for sure. Looking back, was there a moment or experience, like one moment where you said, I'm going to run for city council? I know you explained, you know, that you had done everything else, but can you think of one moment where you said, yes, I'm going to do this?
Well, there's probably a couple of moments. Being retired, of course, I have all these plans and all these things I want to do, and been thinking about them and how to do them and everything. But I'd always, in the back of my mind, thought about the city council and wondered, if I didn't run, would I regret it later? And time keeps marching on. You better think about that now. The election was coming up. I hadn't thrown my hat in the ring or anything. And there was a guy running that I didn't know very many people that knew. And he was the only one running. I thought to myself, boy, you know, if I don't do this now, everybody in my district won't have a choice. If I'm ever going to do it, I better do it now, because there's nobody else running. I'm not getting any younger. I've always thought about doing it, and I don't like to have regrets by not doing something.
Right.
So at the last minute, on the last Friday, when you could file, I did my paperwork, and there it went.
Fantastic. So did you expect to win, or?
You know, I don't really know. It's our background is completely different, mine and my opponent's. Was very different, very nice guy. You know, we got along just fine because we're, you know, thrown in together with a lot of campaign events, and he was a nice guy. But I don't think you go into a campaign and not expect to win. I mean, it's too much work.
That's a really good answer. I like that. All right. So what part of your background or life experience do you think most prepared you for public service?
Well, I'm not the only person on council that grew up in Galveston, but that is a very important part, I think, of to qualify as you, your history, your background.
Right.
I mean, my history with Galveston goes all the way back to the 1950s. I think that's important. But also my training, my experience, and my background in architecture and planning, my experience both in the private practice for architecture and also at the UTMB as a planner. We were responsible for the master plan for the whole campus. At that time, 9 million square feet and 3 campuses.
Wow.
The master plan was required to look at 5, 10, and 20 years out. And UTMB is like a city, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I think that in architecture, you're trained to look further down the road. I think most people in our culture think about to the end of their nose, and that's about it. Everybody wants immediate satisfaction, and that's what they look at and base their decisions on. And my training and background were trained to also see that, of course, but also look down the road and see what the impact of what you're doing today will be down the road. And that helps you kind of prioritize things. And also, I think being an architect, you're trained to see and pay attention. They say architects are not experts at anything, but they know a little something about everything. And they know how to, because architects generally wind up being managers of a team. That's another thing that I think qualifies if you have that type of background. Nothing in architecture gets done solo. It all has to do with a team, because projects, building projects, are so complex. And managing that team and focusing that team on a goal and just getting that goal from the client and you know, how you do that, I think is also all important. It's an important skill. You know, you're required to listen. You're required to collaborate. You know that you can't do any of this by yourself. And then the planning side, you know, enables you to see further down the road the consequences of your actions. And I think that qualifies me as well as, you know, being around Galveston, seeing its incredible transformation over these last 60, 70 years.
I can imagine. And I mean, I feel like even, you know, I haven't been around Galveston quite that long, but closer, you know, pretty close. And I think the last 10 years have been really transformative for not just for the city itself and the infrastructure, but for the community. It feels like everybody's kind of coming together. We fight like cats and dogs when things are going well. But in Galveston, when things don't go well, we come together. We forget all that and we pull together for the same goal. It feels like my dream has always been, and my dream for the 1839 is to try to get everyone to pull together when things are good too, you know, to try to show everybody that in many ways we're on the same team. And I know you're never, I'm not Pollyanna. I know that, you know, you're always going to have trouble. You're always going to have people who disagree. But I think that the spirit of cooperation, connecting people in the way that it has started in the last 10 years, if we can continue that, I think Galveston's going to be, you know, 10 times the city that it is even now. And that's saying a lot in 10 years, if we can just pull together, because there's some big issues to tackle, as you know. So Moving on, what do you see, and that's a good segue here, what do you see as the biggest opportunity for District 3 over the next, let's say, 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that the last 10 years has been transformative. It probably, in my mind, started with Hurricane Ike, you know, wiping the slate clean, and then all this attention on recovery. Really, I used to say after Hurricane Ike that Gallison had more new kitchens per capita than any place in the world because everybody was flooded, but that right. kind of triggered, as I think typically disasters do, when they trigger a building boom. And then, you know, people start moving back, they look for deals and they fix things up, and there's a lot of construction, a lot of attention. And I think that has kind of continued to roll. Mm-hmm. And Gallison is kind of being discovered, I guess mm-hmm. you might say, in a lot of ways, kind of commensurate with the increase in tourism around the world, mm-hmm. I think. But I think there's a lot of opportunity because of that, because mm-hmm. Galveston's on the map now in a lot of ways and sure. in a lot of places. Now, that's the good and the bad thing. You know, we're also limited. We're just a sliver of a sandbar. You can't just open the gates and never close them. We can't sustain that. But I think there's a real opportunity for us to develop into a next level kind of town that is not only a good place for tourists, but a place where people want to live here mm-hmm. and work here. And I think, you know, before there was a time, I remember, when the city would take any kind of development it could get. You put a gas station in the middle of the Strand Historic District, let's go.
Right.
You know, and we're not that anymore. I think it's a time we can be a little more analytical about the way we do business with tourism and the way we do business with everything, and consider our locals a little more in that balance. You know, we're going to have to arrive at a balance between tourism and the locals, because if we don't, and it's happening to a lot of places all over the world, you get out of balance and you can't sustain the tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an opportunity there for us to work towards that balance, get right. that balance to where we have not only the right amount of tourism, but the right kind of tourists and the right kind of place where people really want to come live here.
Right. That's a great answer. I love that. All right. So, and that kind of covers your personal vision for Galveston's future. So, in that future that you envision, what role do you think District 3, what unique role does District 3 have to play in that future 10 years from now?
I talked about how diverse it was a minute ago, you know.
Right.
I think it's each, the different parts of District 3 have completely different characters. You know, so I think there's a vision for each one of those. Mm. Rather than lump it all into an arbitrary boundary.
Right,
you know,
true.
For instance, the waterfront, I think it's got the most potential. I'm extremely excited about what we can do there. That area between the cruise ship Terminal 25 mm-hmm. and all the way down to now the battleship, where it will be at Pier 15, is a golden opportunity for us to develop that area for people.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the development of the port, the working waterfront side of the island has never really been accessible for locals.
No,
and it's always been either cargo or cruise ship, and those two things don't include locals.
They don't.
But the working waterfront is one of the most fascinating places on the island.
It's
fascinating for any city, you know, Vancouver, Seattle, all over the world. Other places understand this, and mm-hmm. they make working waterfronts accessible. You put a boardwalk all the way across the waterfront, for instance.
Right.
You provide pedestrian amenities, you know, shade, maybe a little concert area, open space, places that will draw people to our most unique natural attraction, which is that working waterfront, arguably the most unique. So I think there's a great opportunity for that. We've never gone there before. Mm. Now, there's Harbor House and the restaurant, you know, that George Mitchell built there years ago.
Sure.
But those were kind of in a vacuum, and they still are. They're not connected to anything.
Right.
You know, what we need to do is treat that district as a special district and connect everything from the battleship on the east side all the way across the cruise ship terminals and all the way down to the restaurant right next to the Pierce Cruise Ship Terminal 25.
Right.
Connect that, and then connect all of that back to historic downtown and also the East End Historic District neighborhood.
Wow, I love that.
Across Harborside. That's a big vision. It's going to take a long time to do, but we are making progress doing that right now. You got to make Harborside safer for people to cross.
Right. That's, and then the beauty of it is it doesn't all have to be done at once. Like you can start with pieces and get that going.
And
that starts to bring the people in, and that starts to bring the money and the interest. And then the dominoes start to fall.
It's all about connectivity. You know, when I was an architect practicing, you know, architects can have all the ideas in the world, and there's always more solutions than there are problems. But what drives your analysis, and to me, it's always been about connections and connectivity and circulation.
Right.
It's all about how you move through things, what things are and how you move through them. Uh-huh. I think that's critical to this working waterfront analysis too. The George and Cynthia Mitchell Foundation funded a project to look at a concept to do just what I'm talking about. And so we already have a kind of a guidepost, I guess.
Right.
And we need to start getting into that and executing little pieces of it. And I'm working on something for like that right now.
Oh, great.
I hope to bring something forward.
Maybe
soon.
You can come back and let us know when you're ready to talk about that a little more.
You know, I left out a whole lot of District 3 in that discussion.
You did. Although that is a big, bold plan. So let's talk about some other parts. I mean, obviously the beach is always an attraction. What do you think about development as far as, well, I mean, there's obviously the Stewart Beach area down there. There's, you know, the development in general is kind of a sticky situation. And you mentioned that before, we can be selective with development. But what other places in the district do you think have a lot of potential for
improvement? You
mentioned
Stewart Beach, and I've been working on that for the last couple of months. Yeah. Stewart Beach has had a lot of planning go into it, a lot of plans come and go, sit on the shelf, do this, do that.
Right.
I looked at all of them, and they weren't executed in a way that was effective enough to be sustainable. They all didn't go anywhere. So the council has been working on a plan that I have a lot of confidence is going to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, we're gonna issue a request for proposal for a master developer. We're going to partner, public-private partnership, where the city brings to the table this extremely valuable, high-profile piece of land, and we get a developer who knows how to take these kind of projects and make them profitable, something that the city can be proud of. Stewart Beach should be our flagship part. There's no disagreement on that.
It's beautiful down there.
We've already started that process. Mm-hmm. The first step in that process, in order to issue a request for a proposal, you have to be able to deliver your intentions, what you think this ought to be.
Right.
And the developer delivers his expertise in how to make it economically feasible, possible. So those intentions are we're working on right now, and we're doing that by taking some of the old master plans and revising those. And we've already had meetings on that, stakeholder meetings, where the architects will meet with individual council members, they'll meet with other leaders, and then there'll also be an opportunity for the public to weigh in on what they want to see out there at Stewart Beach. So we're in that kind of defining what it wants to be when it grows up stage right now.
Right.
And then when we get that done, we're going to engage a real estate professional to help us craft this request for proposal in a way that a developer will see this and say, this is not just the aspirations of a bunch of people who haven't thought this through.
Right.
This is a proposal of people who are serious about development.
Right.
They want to know how this can make money for the city, how it can make money for them, how we can develop a park that will be a place that the locals can go to and be proud of and want to go to. It's not exclusively for tourists. I always say, if everything we do is good for locals, it'll be good for tourism.
Right.
And that's been proven in other places around the world.
It has.
So, I mean, that's another one.
That's a great answer.
Further east, where Margaritaville is planned to go and the condos are there, I think that's also a gem on the island because of its natural resources and its fairly pristine natural resources. You know, there's a way to develop that in concert with preserving, really, the thing that people come here for. They come for our natural resources, the beaches, the wetlands, the things that draw the birds to the island. And it's something that you don't see anywhere else, and it attracts the kind of tourists that we're looking for. Some people call them high-quality tourists. They stay longer, spend more money, and that's what we really have to shoot for, instead of more and more tourists.
And
our natural, protecting our natural resources in that way will protect that thing that drives that type of tourists here. And of course, it's one of those, if it's good for locals, it's good for tourists. I like to go walking on the beach. I like to go bird watching. It would be something that would be good for the locals that live here as well as the tourists. And it means that we have to think a little more critically about development and think about protecting the wildlife that lives there. I'm talking about the birds, the critters that the birds feed on, the ghost wolves. I'm talking about everything that lives out there. And then all of the things that their environment requires for them to live there, you know, the connectivity. So we have to think about all of that stuff when we're considering development out there. And
that's great.
None of that stuff is really in our land development or regulations in any meaningful way. But I'm hopeful that we can develop that area in that way.
That's great. That's a great answer. Thank you for sharing that about your district. I think it is one of the most diverse, and there is a lot of potential there. There's a lot of opportunities and unique situations. So it's interesting to hear about that from an expert. So as far as your approach, do you see yourself more as a problem solver, a bridge builder, or a watchdog, and why?
Let me address that in the terms of ranking them. I think, above all, a bridge builder is the most important of those three, because none of the others can happen until you do that. What I mean by that is, one of the requirements of this job to be successful is to build trust. Mm-hmm. And yet, to do that, you have to be able to collaborate. Collaboration is bridge building, I think. Mm-hmm. Nothing else can happen until you do that. I do see myself as a problem solver. that's kind of in the nature of the job description. Architect and planner, they're right. Problem solvers. That's what you do.
Sure.
But again, you can't do that until you've created that trust between yourself and whoever you're dealing with. And nobody can get problems solved by themselves. It takes collaboration.
That's a good
point. That's the only way it happens. And watchdog, I think, is part of problem solving. Because if you're a watchdog, then it means something is going wrong and you have to make sure it doesn't go sideways. But those are problems that you have to solve. I would rather call it a problem solver than a watchdog.
All right. Good point. Great. So we talked a little bit about the diversity in District 3. It has some of the most historic places, but it also has some vulnerable places. So there are some issues, like obviously flooding in downtown is really a serious issue. There are some neighborhoods that probably need more development. What are the top challenges, and which ones are you working to address?
Well, you mentioned historic resources are challenged. They're vulnerable.
Right.
And they have to be maintained. And there's a lot of the historic resources in my district.
For sure.
Starting off with the neighborhood I live in, the East End Historic District is the largest historic district on the island. It's a National Register Landmark District. Mm-hmm. There's very few of those. And it's vulnerable, I think. One of the key things that I think we need to address at Galveston is livability. Mm-hmm. Making Galveston a place where people want to come live and work. And there's a lot that's been going on lately in the neighborhood that I see as kind of hollowing out of the neighborhood. One of the things I did when I first got on council was form the short-term rental committee to look at short-term rentals from the perspective of the people who live with them. Mm-hmm. Because there have been a lot of short-term rental committees over the years. People are concerned about them. They want to know how we're regulating. They want to know how to control it. We formed this committee. And we've been meeting now for a couple of months, and now we're meeting every week because we're trying it's proving to be an incredibly complex subject because, of course, the short-term rentals bring in a lot of hot tax money, right? And that's important. But they're also like little hotels in your neighborhood next to you. They're good for the island. I'm not saying they're not, but we need to balance their impact on the neighborhood with the amount of hot tax that they bring in.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, where I live, I've had as many as five of them within a block of me.
Wow.
And they're empty during the week.
Right.
And not all of them fill up on weekends. Some of them do. And, there's people that I get complaints from people about the trash and the noise and the parking. Mm-hmm. Those are things that I think we can control by ordinance. But the thing you really can't control is how do you replace a neighborhood when you've lost five neighbors out of a block? We've only got a limited number of people who actually live here on the island, and we have like 4,500 short-term rentals, I think, plus whatever Jamaica Beach has. I've seen it happen in my neighborhood, and it's just distressing to see the people that I count on in my neighborhood. I see them in the grocery store. They work in the support the industries in Galveston. Their kids go to school, and now they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And if that continues to happen, I think we're just going to lose Galveston as a place where people want to come live and stay. Would you want to buy a house and raise a family next to a hotel?
No.
Right. So, there's a place for them. I'm not saying there's not. We need to critically look at the way to balance.
Mm-hmm.
We have to recognize that there is an impact on the livability of the island, and that's the people who live here. So, that's one challenge that I see in our District 3 in the East End, but it's not just my district. It's all across the island.
Right. Yeah, and STRs are a unique situation because there's a lot of legislation that kind of dictates how you're able to deal with the short-term rentals. I'd actually love to do an entire, get a panel together and get some experts to talk about it. because, and I'd love to have you be part of it, obviously, but it is a very complex issue, so I won't ask you to explain it to us now because I know that would take more time than you've got, but I appreciate your work on that, and I'd love to know more about it. But yeah, it is definitely an issue, and I know a lot of people have talked about it. You know, it is the hollowing out of the neighborhoods. You're losing a little bit of that soul of the island and the people that make it special. And I think what some people don't realize is that too is what brings tourists here, is the community. When they feel like they're a special part of this community that's connected, that's a draw for people. Nobody just wants to come to a tourist destination. You know, when I talk to people who come here, they're like, tell me where the locals go. I want to meet the people that live here. I want to know what it's like to live in Galveston, you know. So
the people that are on the committee, the short-term rental committee, almost all of them have an interest in short-term rentals. They either own one or they're interested in real estate, and they're not the problem. You know, I understand that the way to be able to afford to live here sometimes is through a short-term rental, and I get that.
Right.
The main problems are the bad actors, we call them, I guess, are mostly the corporate operators, you know, that may have a dozen different, you know, STRs around town, and that money goes away to them.
Right.
The people who are local that operate them, the money stays here. And that's what makes it complicated because, you know, it's really hard to separate that in that detail.
Right. I got you. And then you're handcuffed a little bit with the type of legislation you can pass.
Yeah, the state of Texas has proven to be very hostile towards local zoning controls in Texas. In fact, when we start doing all our research on short-term rentals, it happened around the world, you know, but we can't really get a reasonable good go-by unless we stay in Texas, because Texas is probably more stringent than any place in the world when it comes to local zoning control.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, we'll solve that problem next time.
Yeah.
All right. So infrastructure, drainage, affordable housing, tourism impact, those are top issues. I won't ask you which one's the most important because I know they're all important, but which ones do your constituents talk to you about the most?
Probably tourism impact, the drainage, they only call after a big rain.
Right.
But the tourism impact, and I think that's a really an affordable housing. Affordable housing is not really on the minds of people who live here, but the ones who think about it a little more critically, they understand that it impacts the whole island, every aspect of island. The tourism impact is with us every day now, almost all year long. You know, we used to take a deep breath, you know, in fall and say, oh, we get our island back.
Right.
It's kind of changing a little bit.
It is.
But, you know, people who live here, for the most part, I think understand that tourists are going to be here. Yeah. When we put on 200,000 people on a weekend, it's kind of tough sometimes. The same people are going to complain. I think the real complaint is not so much about the impact of the tourism, but our prioritization of how we structure city government. You know, we should be paying as much attention to the locals as we do to the tourists. The tourists bring in dollars, and the locals here support the whole industry, support the whole island.
Sure.
And I think that's important. I think if it's good for the locals, it's going to be good for tourists. We need to think of the residents first and foremost in everything we do. You know, we have to bring in the money. Tourism is our main industry. We have to bring that money in. But we also have to learn how to balance it. We have limited resources to accommodate tourism and people. If we want to keep this going, we have to learn how to balance those two things. I think tourism is a real challenge. Infrastructure, you know, drainage, the city was founded in 1839. And so we have infrastructure that's that old down there.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know what's underground. You don't until you dig.
Yeah.
I think the city has been doing a really good job of looking ahead into the future about taking into account climate control and sea level rise and subsidence and all that, and how we get water off of the island. And we've got a lot of drainage projects in the works. We just finished up one on Post Office Street in the East End Historic District that's part of a project that's going to help drain that part of the island to a pump station on 14th and Harborside.
That's great.
And there's other pump stations going. So the city is really working on that. They're not going to solve the problem because we're flat, right?
Right.
You can only do so much. If the tide comes up and it rains and you're trying to drain water off of the island, but the tide's coming up, you have nowhere for that water to go.
That's right.
So, but it will solve a lot of the flooding problems. It's just the nature of an island our age is we're constantly going after infrastructure. And we're a long, skinny island. Our infrastructure is spread out in a long, thin line, not like a compact. No, most cities are compact. So it's a little more expensive and a little more difficult to manage the geometry of our island than most cities.
For sure.
And you said affordable housing. To me, affordable housing covers a lot of ground. I like to call it workforce housing, but it impacts, like I said earlier, just about everything that happens, everything that we do here, because if people can't live here, you can't have the workers. You have to get them, bring them in.
Right.
You bring them in, you got more cars on the road. Mm-hmm. You bring them in from somewhere else, you got to pay them more to cover that.
Right.
I think this goes back to the balance. We need affordable housing is one way to get at that sustainable island that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. You know, I can talk about that a little bit later, but I'm not sure affordable housing is on the minds of the constituents as high as the things that impact them directly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. All right. Good answers. All right. So moving along here, let's see what I've got next. So I think you've talked about this one a lot, how to balance the needs of longtime residents with the pressures of development and tourism. So I think the part that's a little bit new there is the development part, but that's all part of it, right? You have a simple solution for a problem that everybody keeps saying we have, which is how do we balance tourism versus focus on the residents? Your answer is just focus on the residents because that's also good for tourists.
Well, I wouldn't put it that simply.
Okay, maybe
I wouldn't put it that simply. It's more about considering residents as much of a priority as tourism.
I got you.
If not more. You know, because I think it's not one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a way of shifting our thinking,
right?
And prioritizing people really are really go after they see a pile of cash right over here. That's going to be the priority. But what you can't see, and it's harder to define, is the quality of life for people who live here. It's harder to make that objective. It's harder. We all know it's there, but it's not as immediate as a pile of cash sitting here.
Yeah.
And we have to adjust our thinking. A pile of cash is not the only measure of value, especially when you're talking in terms of a city.
Right.
You know, other things have value and other things matter. And we got to train ourselves to consider those.
That's great. And so the part I like about your approach is that you feel like it's really two sides of the same coin. It sounds like that if we focus on a good life for residents, we do have to balance tourism. There are some unique situations with tourists, the STRs, the other things, but it sounds like there's a middle ground there. Whereas before it always felt a little bit like if you add to the balance here, you take away here. So I think it's interesting your approach that you feel like we can improve both, you know, by improving certain areas of the city.
Improving one results in improving the other. Mm-hmm,
right.
Especially
that's
if it comes
a great
to
perspective.
Quality of life.
I like that. I agree with you. I appreciate you coming today. So I have a few more questions here for you. So how do you think Galveston can do a better job of including more voices, especially from underserved areas, and particularly with the focus on city decisions?
I've always thought that the more constituents get involved in city government, the better. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody can come to city council meetings at any time and talk 3 minutes on whatever it is they want, doesn't matter what people do.
Right.
And I appreciate that, but that's not enough. You got to reach out to the public more in every way you can. I will say that there's an opportunity coming up to do that. There's a couple of opportunities, actually. But one of them is we're about to embark on the revision of the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is probably the city's most important document because it drives all the land regulation, development regulations. It drives all the ordinances. It drives all the recommendations from staff to city council, planning commission, and others. Mm-hmm. It drives everything that the city does, which in turn really impacts the quality of life for people who live here. And it hasn't been revised in 11 years. Mm-hmm. And so that's too long.
Yeah.
And the document that's intended to reflect the aspirations of the people who live here, period. That's what it's about. A lot of this process is going to take a year, first of all, to do this plan. And then after that, we're going to revise the land development regulations to fit the plan. So during that year, we're going to be reaching out to everybody on this island. Anybody who lives here, works here, is going to have to be part of this plan. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for you to provide your input. And so that's something to look forward to. Also, right now, the port is in the middle of their revision of their master plan. And that's also important for people to participate in. They have some public meetings that they're going to be they're going to be reviewing their plan and asking for input on. I think that's important, you know, especially in the light of what I talked about earlier about development of that working waterfront area, right, and cruise ships. Mm-hmm. You know, what do people think about where we are with our cruise ship terminals? We got one under construction now. It's going to be open, I think, in November. Mm-hmm. So we really haven't felt the whole impact of all of it yet. But what do you think about that? That's part of the input I think the port needs on their master planning process.
Great.
You have to look at every opportunity you can. You have to engage with people. You have to collaborate and communicate and start building that trust so, you know, people will feel free to come and talk to you. I think there's a lot of ways of doing that. In my neighborhood, East End Historic District, they have a monthly newsletter that, mm-hmm. that I contribute to, and then they meet monthly, and I go to every one of those meetings. And same with the university area. Whenever they have a meeting, I show up to their meetings, and also the condos out there. I think it's good to be out there.
There's a lot of opportunities for people in your district to come talk to you directly, or they could also email you through the city.
They do.
Yeah, that's great. That's good to be open like that. So that, and that's interesting because the master plans are, the way you phrased it is very poignant. It is the way we want to live, essentially, in Galveston, what we want out of it.
Yeah. And it'll be kind of controlling our lives for the next 5 to 10 years.
All right. What is your approach to listening, gathering feedback, and then turning that into action? So we talked about how you listen to constituents.
You got that order pretty right there. Listening, right. Listening is one of the hardest things for people to do. You'll never be able to collaborate, and you'll never be able to gather the information. I think I kind of talked about it a little earlier when I was talking about my background, mm-hmm. training. I have to do a lot of analysis in my profession, but before you can do that analysis, you have to get the information. Before you can get the information, you have to be able to collaborate and build a trust with people, and you can't do that unless you listen, unless you know how to listen. So that's very important that you got that one first, because it leaves all the other things. But, you know, you can have all of the plans in the world, but they're not going anywhere unless you have others helping you. You can't do any of this in a vacuum. I can't do anything by myself. I think the more you understand that, the more skilled you'll become at reaching out and collaborating with as many people as you can to get things done.
Great.
So I think
that's the best answer I've heard to that question. All right, so this is a question I like to ask. What advice would you give to young people or future leaders who care about Galveston but don't feel heard yet?
I think they need to get engaged. There are so many opportunities on this island to get engaged in your environment, everything that happens. There's so many committees, or there's so many philanthropic organizations in town, in city council. City has so many different committees you can get on. The more of that you do, the more engaged you'll become in the community, the more connections you'll make, the more trust you'll build, the more impact you'll have. You don't necessarily have to serve on city council, you just have to get out into the community. And I think Galveston is extraordinarily rich with opportunities to do that, to get involved.
Great, good answer. Yeah, and that's a good point too, is, I mean, we need younger people. I hear that from many of the people that are involved in the city and the community. They say, we need to get young people involved in politics and in, you know, not just politics, but in business and in community outreach and things like that.
We have to make this a place where young people want to come first. Mm-hmm. Before they can get involved, they have to be here, right?
Right.
That's true. That's why this workforce housing and this protection of natural resources and all these other things that impact the quality of life for living here. You know, in St. Petersburg's right on the Gulf of Mexico. This is a gorgeous place. You know, a lot of tourist activity. And we recently visited St. Petersburg with a group to kind of see how they do things. Their priority is on everything they do is on residents. Mm-hmm. You know, the way they develop their waterfronts, they don't allow any big box building on waterfronts or anything like that. But everything they do, it's about connectivity, connecting people to things, is all about the residents first, because then they know that the tourists will come. They've got an exquisite natural resource. They protect that, and they know the tourists are going to come.
Great. So what's one thing you wish more people understood about how city government works?
Well, it's probably impossible to understand the complexity of it unless you're in there doing it. People come to us with their problems that impact them in their way. Every single thing we do, if you do this, you're going to impact this, even though you may or may not know it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a scale, it's a balance. You have to be able to see a really big picture of the complexity. There's competing interests everywhere. And I don't think that's even possible for individuals to understand about city government. Mm. It's a reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can say, yeah, I know it's complicated, but you don't really know what or why.
Right, right. Well, there is one kind of simple thing that I think a lot of people don't understand about Galveston, the system of government in particular. I think, you know, there's a lot of focus on the mayor, but people don't realize that with the Galveston system that every council person gets a vote. And so could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you're right about that. The mayor is really just another council person that has a lot more work to do than the rest of us. He's really good at it too, but he runs the meeting. Somebody's got to run the meeting. So he runs the meeting, but he doesn't control the agenda. And he's also the public face for the city. And so he's everywhere all the time. But again, he's another vote just like any other council person. Any two council people can put on the agenda anything they want, mm-hmm. about anything. It's in our charter. So I would say it's not necessarily a strong mayor. Mm-hmm. He's just another one of the council people.
Right. So that means it's really important for people to get out and vote. For when people vote for the person, they get two chances essentially at a strong leader for their community. When they vote, they can vote for the mayor and they can also vote for their council person.
Right.
And they can look at those as equal. I mean, you could make an argument that your council person is even more important because they have the same power, but they serve a smaller group and you're a member. Yeah. But I think the mayor also has other things to consider as well, because he does serve the entire community.
Yeah, but you're voting for the face of the island that takes people's impression of the island out everywhere.
What's a recent vote, decision, or project that you've supported that you feel proud of, and why?
There's a couple, and some coming up too. Well, it's taken a couple of years, but we've finally gotten things in place to convert the Rosenberg Elementary School to a park, a city park. And it's not been easy. You know, even though the couple million dollars was raised locally, it didn't cost the city a penny. The demolition won't cost the city a penny, but that all this was done with the neighborhood grassroots response. We started a couple of years ago not knowing what was going to happen. The only thing we knew was that the school was going to go away. So what's going to go back there? So we looked at the zoning and said, oh my gosh, the zoning is different from all our houses around. We've got the zoning changed. And then next thing you know, they're going to put it out to bid for the highest bidder. And so the neighborhood out there got together and first of all, polled everybody in the neighborhood about what they wanted to see out there on that spot. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a few people making it up. Mm-hmm. It was the whole neighborhood. And, you know, they determined they wanted it to be a park and be part of the park that's next door. And so they started just raising money, campaigning and raising money. And they had a deadline imposed by GIC, and they met that deadline. Mm-hmm. The city put conditions on it. We're not taking anything unless it's completely a green space. No buildings, nothing underground, no hazardous materials. Nothing. Just, we're not going to spend a penny doing it, but that's what you have to do. And this group has actually done it. They've raised the money. They're very close to doing the hazardous material abatement right now, which the demolition will follow. And that's been an extraordinary example of locals getting involved in their city government. You know, if you want to change something, you want to know how to do it, there's an example right there. It's really remarkable. I started that by getting the zoning changed, and then by a resolution supporting the idea, and then we voted again to endorse the certain conditions that the city placed on accepting that property or not. Mm-hmm. And we got all that done over a period of several months on city council, and the group that was doing it raised their money, and it's a successful project, you know. Now, it won't be over, of course, until we see that building gone, we see that green field right. sitting there and people on it.
Right.
But I think it's been an extraordinary success. I guess one of the other things, and we haven't seen the results of it yet, was the formation of the short-term rental committee. That took a few months to get that done, too, because there's been a lot of short-term committees off and on, but this is the first official city committee formed by a vote of the council. And all the appointees were by council. It's staffed by city staff, and we've got a deadline, and we've got a mission and a goal and all that. So that was kind of hard to get it going, and it's extremely complex, but it's something that I think has been important to everybody on this island. And I've got high hopes for that.
So that's actually a great transition into another question I had, which is, I know a lot of people know that you're on council, but you're actually on a lot of other committees. You were illuminating me on that before we started the interview. So tell everybody, tell our listeners a little bit about what you do, because you're on several of those, right?
Yeah, well, everybody that's on council that signs up for a committee or two, you know, that have city council members serving as what they call ex officios. Mm-hmm. Normally, they're non-voting members. They're there to because a committee is important enough that it needs council representation. But when it came my turn to figure out what committees I wanted to be on, it seemed like the park board was one that nobody wanted to be on, for one. And for number two, most all the parks that the park board managed were in my district. Stewart Beach, East Beach, right. Seabrook Park, and so on. And we're kind of undergoing a little trust crisis at the time. And I thought, well, maybe that's something I can help fix or mm-hmm. help work with somehow. It didn't actually turn out to be exactly that way, but you know, I think we're on a good path now. The way it happened could have been different, but I think we're on a good path now to straighten it all out.
So when given your choice, you picked the toughest assignment.
I picked the toughest assignment out there.
That's
you
great.
Know, I don't know. I like challenges,
that
I guess.
That says a lot about your character. Yeah.
But the other one I picked was the Galveston Housing Finance Corporation / Galveston Property Finance Authority. If there ever was a committee that needed an acronym, that's the one.
Right.
So this is the GHFC, GPFA committee. And this committee's job was to facilitate workforce housing. You know, try to make it easier for people to come live and work here. And it hadn't met in 18 months. And I said, oh my God, this is an issue that, again, pervades almost everything else about the island, is being able to have people who want to work here be able to live here. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, we got to get that committee back in action.
That's great.
So I signed up for that one, and we were down several members. We finally got the committee fully staffed up with members. We had to do a lot of research because nobody really knew where the committee was or what they had done or anything. You know, and housing is a very complex subject. There's a myriad of tools out there that the state, local, and regional levels that we had to get our heads around. We had to figure out how much money we actually had. We're at the point now where we're ready to get some projects going.
That's great.
So we're going to be at the next city council meeting in August 28th. This committee is going to go before the council in workshop and describe where they are right now, because in the end, this committee can't do any projects like this without the councils. And we really want to get the council up to speed on what we've done, what we're doing, how we did it, and everything, to provide a little confidence in the council that this committee knows what they're doing and is ready to go. You know, before we say just come to them with this big project, nobody on the council, I don't think, is, with the exception of a couple of people, I think, have any idea of what the Housing Finance Corporation does.
Right.
So we're anxious to get that one going. And then the short-term rental committee was one that I put on myself. You know, I got that one started, and that one is, we're meeting weekly now because there's just so much to cover.
So I want to get this straight here. So you were given your choice of assignments. You chose the park board, STRs, and housing.
There's another one.
Is it world peace?
No, this is kind of related to that waterfront opportunity I told you about. Back when I was practicing architecture, we did a lot of work for George Mitchell. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of his lease space build outs, historic restorations, worked on the Hotel Galvez for 10 years. One of the things we did was George Mitchell had the lease on the waterfront up there, and we kept looking for ways to build out more on his lease. And so we would do these schemes and figuring out, you know, presenting these schemes to him how to develop the waterfront. Well, that was 20 years ago, but it still stuck with me that that's such an opportunity over there. So, and I heard about this. It's called a real estate committee, a joint committee between certain members of the Wharf Board, certain members of the city council, three from each. Before I was on a city council, I attended a couple of Wharf Board meetings where they talked about that area right there and what to do about it. When they talked about the SOS plan, I think I mentioned to you earlier, that looked at a concept of how to develop that area, one of the Wharf Board members says, well, everybody loved the plan, right? You can't love the plan. It sounds great. So everybody was excited about it. And one of the Wharf Board members says, well, what are we going to do now? Are we just going to sit back and feel good about this and then forget about it? What are we going to do? We all like the project. Now tell us what we're going to do. So the chair stood up and says, well, we're going to let the real estate committee kind of take the lead on this. So that was before I got elected. So when I did get elected, I asked Craig to put me on that real estate committee. And so That's the other, I think I got them all now. Park Board, Short-Term Rental Real Estate, and Galveston Housing Finance Committee. And I'm realizing
picked the four most difficult assignments.
Well, it's a little
but
more
But they're very impactful, too.
I realize now that it's a little more than I could handle. But well, I'm doing my best to try to get through them.
If anybody can do it, you can. All right. So this is a fun one. If you could wave a magic wand and fix only one major issue in Galveston overnight, what would it be?
If I could fix this one problem, it would be housing affordability. So anybody who wants to work here can live here. If I fix that one problem, because that in turn, I think, would require that the balance of tourism and locals be solved.
That's a great answer. I like that. You tricked me a little bit there, because if you were able to do that, you'd solve multiple problems, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So, and that would improve tourism also, would help
it would help
the livability. So it really touches to all of those. So that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, the connection between those. So what will success look like for Galveston in 2035? What do we need to start doing right now in order to get there, in your mind?
Well, the answer to the last question is kind of critical to the answer to that question,
right.
I think. Because in 2035, what I would see is an island that has a perfect balance between locals and tourism. People who want to live here can. People who want to work here can. People who want to raise their kids here can.
Right.
And, of course, everybody wants to visit here on a very limited little sandbar with limited resources. It's just, to think about it, boggles the mind. But that's what you asked me in 2035, what it would look like.
10 years. So you're already kind of working on some of these problems. So what do you feel like the first step is? What's the first big hurdle in order to...
It's not a linear process. First of all, you have to take opportunities as you see them. If you have these goals and opportunities in your head, you got to constantly be on the lookout for opportunities and try to put yourself in a place to take advantage of them. They don't always pop up when you want them to. But as long as you're considering all of them, because there's not one silver bullet, obviously.
Right.
Even though you asked me for that silver bullet, and I told you
that's okay.
Yeah, there's not one silver bullet.
Right.
So,
that's great.
But I believe the Galveston is heading in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We just need to get the right leadership up there at City Council, and that happens every 2 years. That's your opportunity to get the right leadership to drive it in that direction.
So the secret is probably getting the people who understand the problem and believe in the solution. I know, I'm oversimplifying everything you say.
Yeah.
That's for me and for our listeners.
Yeah. Well, when I say the right team, they have the people who can really collaborate with each other.
That is key. I've
be noticed. Purposeful about the goals for improving the quality of life for people who live.
I've noticed that the councils that are the most effective are the ones that can work, I won't say across the aisle because it's nonpartisan, but there are obviously clear differences in some of the council members, and sometimes that's geographical because of demographics, but sometimes it's just personalities. But I've noticed that the councils that are the most effective are when you have at least five people on there that really get along and really will cross the aisle, you know, will cross over for an issue if they can be convinced, essentially, or convincible.
But you got to be able to talk and respect the other's opinions and all that, because you're never going to agree on everything. It's always a balance, you know, but it's critical. I think people really need to understand that their vote makes a huge difference.
Right. So this is another oversimplified question, I'm sure, but do you think Galveston's heading in the right direction? Or if not, where do we need course correction?
Yeah, I think we are heading in the right direction. That's not the perfect direction. I think throughout this interview, I've kind of explained to you a little bit about my aspirations and the way that I think things work. But I think we're getting a little more in that direction than we were in the past. My perspective goes way back. I remember when we were a town that would take any business that did anything at any time just to get people here on the island. I think we're past that now. That says to me that we're in the right direction. And, you know, we can focus a little more now on, instead of getting more people here, focus on getting the right people here and begin to build on the quality instead of the quantity. And I think everybody's kind of on board with that idea. How we do it, you know, it's still up for debate, because nobody in Galveston is going to agree on the same thing.
Right. That is true. All right, great. What's something about District 3 that you think most people on the island or off the island should know but don't?
That's interesting. Well, District 3, the thing that they don't know is, I think we covered right at the top, how diverse it is. It's like three or four different cities all in one. It's
right.
Covers a lot of geographical area,
sure.
But a lot of that geographical area is Dredgeville over on Pelican Island.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it is really really critical and filled with cultural and economic drivers on this island.
Right.
And it's not just the East End Historic District. It's not just Fish Village.
Right.
It's not just the condos. It's not just the downtown, historic downtown. It's not just the waterfront.
Right.
It's not just Pelican Island. There's opportunities in all those places. And I think that's not all that well understood.
That's a great answer. Yeah, I thought I knew that, but you've actually, you know, opened my eyes to a few other issues that I haven't thought about for District 3, so that's great. When you look back on your time in office, what do you hope your legacy will be?
That he cared, I guess. Mm-hmm. Cared enough to take the time to have a complete and fair understanding of the issues and worked hard. Mm-hmm. And it's a better place because of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've probably already accomplished that. I'm impressed. You might be a little quieter than some, but you're not necessarily always in people's faces. But I think it's great the way you hold things together sometimes, it seems like, when I watch council meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really impressed with your knowledge, and you were definitely patient with us. So that proves your patient point there. Thank you for sitting through 21 difficult questions. I know it's not easy sometimes.
But. Well, you know, this kind of thing really helps clarify in your mind when you talk about it, when you write about it, your ideas.
Right.
It helps to clarify your own personal thoughts.
Right.
So this is helping me as much as it's helping you.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. We really enjoyed it. The only thing I want to try to lock you down on is if you'll come back and talk to us again. You said there's a couple of big announcements, so maybe we can get you back in, or maybe I can come to you next time. Another thing is that we have, I don't know if you're aware, but we have this group we call the 39er. And it's 39 people that we feel represent something unique about Galveston. So like Craig Brown is one of them, Hinckley and some others. And we'd like to formally invite you, and you can say no, and I cut this part of the interview if you say no. but we'd like to formally invite you to be one of our 39ers, which just means there's no membership dues, there's no requirements, but if we have an issue that's, say, related to District 3 or your expertise in architecture, we would call on you and say, hey, if you have time, can you give us a quote or maybe a quick interview on this subject?
Sure,
because the idea of what we're trying to do is put together a group of people, 39, just kind of arbitrary because of the 1839, but we've also kind of mapped out areas of expertise. We feel like if we put the best people in Galveston together working on solutions and cooperating, that we can find answers that maybe we couldn't find. You know, it's kind of, I describe it this way sometimes, it's kind of like the, you know, the elephant, it's the rope, it's the palm leaf, you know. It's, if we put all those things together, we know it's an elephant. We have the problem, and we can solve it much better if you get people cooperating. Plus, I think it's also great for people to hear from experts and people that are really doing this work, because I've done work on political campaigns, a lot of them, probably too many. And what we hear all the time is, why aren't you doing anything about X? But someone's already done something about X and they just don't know it. Mm-hmm. You know, the information, there's this information gap sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's an answer and it wasn't supported by the voters necessarily. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that would require a bond issue. Or, oh, that's a county issue, that's not a city issue. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's this information void there. So. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long circle around to ask you if you'd like to participate, if you'd like to be one of the 39ers.
Sure. I mean, is he asking me to be on another committee?
Yes. This one's a little easier than the other four.
Okay.
So
that all sounds like a good deal. You kind of hit the nail on the head there about the complexity of everything and how difficult it is to get your head around it. And that looks like maybe a way to help.
Right. If we can understand 1/39th of it, you know, then we just put together enough people, we'll eventually see the entire picture.
Right.
But I think you have a pretty clear idea of the big picture. And so you definitely add a lot. And your district is key to the success of Galveston, as much as any, and maybe more than some, just because you do incorporate some. And I'm not, you know, saying anything negative about anyone's district, but you do incorporate some of the key economic drivers of the island, the port, the beach, downtown.
It's where the island all started.
Right, that's right. It's the old island. And you make a good point that it's almost like four, you know, even UTMB, it's almost like a city unto itself over there. You know, it's like a little community. So anyway, I appreciate your time and for listening to me talk there. and answering sure. all our questions. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. Our door's always open. If you need anything from us, just let us know.
Okay.
We'll be in touch and let you know what your next committee assignment is.
Well, maybe we can play the banjo and guitar one day.
Oh, there you go. That's great. We were talking about that offline. He plays the banjo. I play the guitar. David Finkley plays the piano, so we got to get him to sit in with us. And Christy plays the bass.
We'll make a CD or
there
something.
You go. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.